beaming into your mind like a ray of cosmic revelation, smashing through the mainstream like a comet of prophecy. You're listening to Planet Verloc, your podcast for everything super psionics and magic tech. Yes, welcome to my show. Tonight's podcast is titled Psionics Requires Brutal Honesty. Let's talk about that. You know, one of the very first things I had to do when I initiated my apprenticeship under Mr. Cosimano, the godfather of psionics, had to do with working with my own energies. While working with my own energies, I was guided by my mentor to discover myself without all the usual filters that are present to, you know, distort the way that I ordinarily see myself. And these are realizations which have a direct impact on one's success in psionics operations at some point down the road. Tonight, I'm going to talk about some comparisons as well between great authors and entrepreneurs where a certain degree of brutal honesty about oneself might have made a rather significant difference in the lives of these great thinkers. Then I'll tie together these examples to some of my own experiences, perhaps, and we'll see where psionics can be a benefit to my listeners in regard to these examples of self-awareness and working with our own energies. So without further ado, let us begin. I was a young teen and a student of self-taught meditation for a number of years before I came into contact with the master of psionics, Mr. Cosimano. Well, as the story goes, I was full of ideas, ideas which actually worked, and this impressed my mentor very much, but it also worried him about the speed at which I was progressing while not observing my own energies. Perhaps I was moving too fast, and in this direction I was moving, perhaps I was not attaining wisdom, merely knowledge. I had beginner's luck, and all that I did with mind powers and magic just sort of worked automatically in my life. I had great need for this magic, of course, as I've already told my story of my childhood years being plagued by rather unpleasant paranormal activity. Religion didn't help me at the time. The Bible didn't make it all go away. But when I began focusing on my mind and learning basic magic and psionics, I experienced an oasis in the midst of paranormal madness. Things changed. The paranormal transformed into the, well, normal. And these forces, which at first harassed me, fell in line under my commands. In essence, I learned to take charge of my own energies. One of the first things I had to do was begin learning not to deceive myself. We all do this on a daily basis, deceiving ourselves. Some people think that they are uglier than they really are. Other folks believe they're God's gift to women or to men more than they actually are. And a number of other details which we ordinarily overlook about ourselves. So my mentor had me stand in front of a mirror with a tape recorder. My job was to make certain observations about my environment and then, of course, about myself and speak honestly into the tape recorder whatever I observed, and I was instructed to leave nothing out. The next step was to remove my clothing and look at myself in the nude. Now, I know, you're permitted to have yourself a good hearty belly laugh on my show. It was rather funny at first. Yes, I was rather shocked the first time my mentor had suggested this to me. My first thoughts were, of course, oh dear, did I get myself involved with some kind of a pervert I don't know, even know yet? But no, seriously, I performed a variety of self-observation exercises and then followed by awareness training where I was required to go an entire day, mind you, blindfolded. And in other exercises, I was tied up and restrained to my, you know, by my partner magician to learn how to free my mind from my body. And this is very significant. the mind is freed from the body once we come to a realization that we're not going to be moving around. It was rather funny to observe myself from a reference point of view from outside of my body, seeing myself in this bluish hue of light, and then noticing the oddness of my posture, the curvature of my head, and the funny slouch I could see more clearly from a disembodied or mentally projected point of view. This seems far-fetched, perhaps, to some of my listeners, but practicing these exercises makes all of this indeed possible. In short, I realized that I wasn't as hot and attractive as I thought I was during my teenage youth, and this was at first a little shocking to me because my view of myself was rather, you know, quite different before coming to learning psionics. But I came to appreciate the honesty and to learn to enjoy my pursuit of further awakening my mind. Psionics requires brutal honesty. Long story short, all of these exercises and experiments proved to be 100% accurate, legitimate in returning to me certain results which improved my overall psionics abilities in the scheme of things. Else, if I had not worked at these exercises, I'd be a completely different kind of person, albeit a different kind of magician. So we'll cover some of these exercises in more detail in some of my future podcasts if you're curious to try these exercises for yourself. What I'm getting at here is that most of the time people on the whole are not very aware, at least not self-aware. We don't tend to really self-reflect. I was lucky or fortunate that I had spirits or entities knocking on the door to wake me up to a realization that the world is more than the visual or the obvious sum of its parts. But not everyone has this marvel of good fortune. So I decided I'd podcast to share with some of you my experiences and hope that this benefits you. Before I go on any further here, allow for me to impart my perception of the immediate present. And perhaps I might imbue my listeners with a vision of our times, which may allow wisdom to blossom. Many of us right now feel rather captivated, albeit downright gagged, by Big Brother. We are told to wear masks, and if we don't, then we're all of us a bunch of inconsiderate monsters to everyone around us. Social distancing has become the new norm that everyone is practicing or trying to, and we find ourselves in close quarters with SNS, MSM, and the doors to the outer world close in behind us as we engage in relentless peddling of virtue signaling in forums and social media platforms. But folks, we are not robots. We are not computer programs. We're human beings. But those who attempt to control us do not see the natural world as a natural blueprint for life. Rather, they are possessive authoritarians who serve the primordial protocol, I've podcasted about this before, of an ancient darkness which seeks to oppress us so that it can ultimately devour our souls and possess us. What I want for my listeners to consider is living our lives to the best that we can, in the present. Perhaps a good way to illustrate my point here is, well, there's this old film from 1987, starring Rutger Hauer, rest in peace, where he takes the role of a Russian soldier who is intentionally captured to come to the aid of Jews in a concentration camp. He gets taken prisoner himself and then later helps to lay down a plan for the biggest prison escape in World War history. But while this may be the grand climax of the movie which sold the script to Hollywood, there is a hidden message about midway in the reeling of this film, which depicts a scene wherein a younger Jew is so enraged by the cruelty of the Nazi guards torturing and murdering his people that this younger man challenges his elder in the camp. The elder, who is throwing a party and they're drinking and dancing within their prison camp, explains to the young man that while it is true that we are prisoners here, we need to feed our spirit. satisfy our souls. And so this is why we still have our little soirees and drink together, not as prisoners in a concentration camp, but as people with a heart and a soul. The basic realization in this scene of the film may lend some wisdom to the times that we are currently in, and to times of darkness we are falling deeper into day by day. Whether you live in a large house, or a tiny cottage, a condo, or an apartment, a tract home, a trailer, what you must remember to do is to live for today. Do not live for tomorrow's escape. Each moment of your life is precious. Sit and meditate and reach out to the stars, water your plants on your balcony, and share that vital breath of the cosmos with all life that is around you. Refuse to be made to live by somebody else's standards. Live your life. There will always be tyrants and oppressors in this world. This is Boot Camp 101 for your soul. Our goal is to raise our consciousness high, like an American eagle. Soar aloft the artificial spires and valleys of darkness so that we may evolve into greater beings of light and cosmic conscience. While in the meantime, we can also help our fellow man and woman in society by working psionics to fend off their attackers and to make society a place of growth and not oppression. Yet still, you and I must live our lives to the fullest that we can in the immediate present of each and every moment. But now, let us take a look at the lives of some famous people who have contributed to society's literature to see if we can divine from each one's experiences something useful to us. Namely, we live in a time where jobs may disappear without warning, societies collapse or shut down, businesses close, more and more people looking for ways to become self-sustaining, work as a freelancer. I know I did exactly this for some years. And of course, we have bright individuals who aim for the golden glory of becoming their own boss and live the life of an entrepreneur or an independent journalist, whatever your path may be. Then, of course, we have other folks who just go online and beg the world for donations without a second thought about what they're doing or how they appear, to people with a little more common sense. What are your contributions going to be? So tonight I've selected three authors from different time periods as follows: Bram Stoker, Howard Phillips Lovecraft, and Philip K. Dick. All of these authors have a few things in common, such as writing about monsters or dystopian scenarios. However, and likewise, each man had a very different personal life, a work life, or lack thereof. Plus, we will observe how each individual is either contributing to the system and society, or not very much at all. This is considerable, but you must come to a gradual unrolling, a gradual understanding, a blossoming, I might say, rather than being told at face value what the wisdom speaks to us, who are making a short but deserving study of very important humans who lived, perhaps, long before us. We shall start with the life and works of Bram Stoker. Let us begin an understanding of what were Bram Stoker's contributions to society. Now, Bram Stoker lived from the 8th of November, 1847, to the 20th of April, 1912. Stoker is remembered as an Irish novelist. In 1897, Stoker produced the Gothic horror novel Dracula. However, Stoker was not well known for this particular novel during his own lifetime. People who were more aware of Stoker during his lifetime regarded him as the personal assistant to actor Sir Henry Irving, who owned the Lyceum Theatre, a historical theater located in London, England, a theater which opened just a little under 200 years ago, give or take. The theater opened in July of 1834. In August of 1817, however, the theater became the first in all of England to be illuminated by gas, or that is to say, gas is a power source for lighting. Now, Bram Stoker was not British himself, rather he was an Irishman born in Dublin, and the third child of seven offspring. Stoker's eldest brother was Sir Thornley Stoker, who became the first baronet, and was a medical writer, anatomist, and a surgeon. Bram Stoker himself had in his life experienced early childhood illness of an unknown kind, which is similar in some ways to the early life of Howard Lovecraft, who we will talk about soon. In those times of illness, or limitations, obstacles, barriers, these thinkers, Howard Lovecraft and Bram Stoker, had a singular luxury for listening to and acknowledging the many thoughts which manifested in their inventive and creative minds. Bram Stoker worked as a secretary and director of the Lyceum Theatre for his friend and actor Sir Henry Irving, and Stoker also worked as a newspaper writer at the Daily Telegraph in London. Now, Stoker's influence for writing the novel of Dracula that we so well know him for now was based on Central and Eastern European folklore, and contrary to popular belief, it had very little to do with the historical Vlad the Impaler, though some sources try to claim Dracula is indeed Vlad III. Stoker was personal friends with Prime Minister William Ewart Gladstone, as well as J.W. Brodie Innes, a member of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. But most notably was Stoker's friendship to the actor Sir Irving, who was an active Freemason. Stoker himself apparently was not a member of any lodge. No, indeed, though his friendships were among very prestigious and high-ranking individuals in British society. Of the works in Bram Stoker's time, the more successful of his works, again during his lifetime, was likely, possibly, the personal reminiscences of Henry Irving, and that had to do with the life of his friend, Sir Henry Irving, after that notable actor and theater owner-operator had passed away. And before that, possibly Bram Stoker's volume titled The Duties of Clerks of Petty Sessions in Ireland. So essentially, the life that Bram Stoker lived is unlikely what anyone who has read Dracula today might speculate about the man. There seems to be two lives to the author, possibly more. One is the everyday work life to pay the bills and mix and mingle in society circles of fellowships, and then the ultimate work, which typically becomes famous long after an author's life force has run out like a candle extinguished by the wind. Many years pass, and then one day the author's work immortalizes his name forever. Some people may not realize this, but Bram Stoker may have been the world's first technical writer. I know this caught my attention because I had worked as a technical writer for over a decade or so. Let us weigh in with consideration of this post-mortem fame and retrospect the life of Howard Phillips Lovecraft had. Lovecraft is possibly best known in our modern times for his work, The Call of Cthulhu. Before we delve into all of Lovecraft's great accomplishments in literature and fathering new genres thereof, let us look at what was the life of this man. Howard Phillips Lovecraft was born in August 1890 in Providence, Rhode Island. Howard died in March of 1937, aged only 46. It may have been true that Lovecraft was an inherent literary genius. Yet his contempt for the world around him and some of his racial attitude probably contributed to at least some of his life being filled with misery. Though in Howard's defense, the man was often physically ill, at least as a child, and he continued to suffer on and off from a variety of difficulties. Again, to his defense, not all of which were Howard's own fault, but difficulties which, possibly with a little careful thinking, might have been turned to more of his advantages rather than his disadvantages. To better understand this, let us look at Lovecraft's life as a youth. As a young person, on up into Howard's days in high school, he was prone to symptoms of some kind of neurological disorder, maybe multiple. While Howard enjoyed high school, it seems that he may have been incredibly stressed by the lesser abilities, in his view, or attitudes, in his view, of his teachers. Albeit, Howard was well capable of reading and writing proficiently at the age of only 3. Howard's grandfather was a successful businessman who maintained contact with his little grandson by writing and, of course, receiving correspondences with the young Howard. Upon the death of Howard's grandfather and the collapse of Howard's grandfather's businesses, the family was forced to move from their estate into a duplex. And at this turn of events, Howard did not take the new circumstances very well. You might say that Howard failed to roll with the punches, and it likely did not help that his aunts continued to wear black clothing around the house in mourning of their father for some time period thereafter. In fact, this kind of environment seemed to have a significant impact on Howard, resulting in phantasmic nightmares and of strange beings of darkness carrying him into unfathomable abysses and beyond space and time into unimaginable outer hells. Whether Lovecraft suffered from mental illness or simply had a rather elaborate imagination combined with his possible emotional and physical sensitivity, we can appreciate his contributions to literature and new writing styles, for which he authored some of the most influential stories. Even today, there are video games, role-playing games, comic books, and films created out of the Lovecraftian literary movement that was called cosmicism. Now, where Lovecraft's powerful narrations and descriptive and vivid stories of paranormal horror and supernatural fantasy breaks off from the light of success in his life may not be too difficult to imagine. Fortunately, we do not have to imagine Howard's difficulties. These are clear and clearly noted. Thankfully, we can read about his life in the works of Donald Tyson, an author and fan of Lovecraft, albeit quite a critic of Lovecraft as well, or by following the popular Lovecraft forums and web homes on the internet to learn some things about the author. It was in Donald Tyson's book about Lovecraft where I first read of Howard's refusal to accept money for his works of literature. That's interesting. At least at some point, Howard considered himself a true gentleman, and he possibly fantasized that he was an Englishman sort of gentleman, and essentially, in his opinion, Howard believed a true gentleman would not allow himself to be paid for his great writings. This is, of course, an idealism which at length may have brought Howard Lovecraft into utter poverty, in one sense, and despair in the end of his life, combined with illness, physical illness, and a great deal of stress after his divorce. Lovecraft married once. Howard's wife ran a business, but not too long after marriage, her business collapsed. Howard took some jobs to help his wife, who was also going through tough times of physical illness, but ultimately, Howard's lack of past professional experience made his prospects for obtaining solid work, a dismal prospect at best. Added to this was an increase in foreigners who were taking many of the labor and common jobs where he moved to in New York. In one episode of Howard's life, his apartment was burglarized, and this left Howard with nothing of value left except for the shirt on his back and the shoes on his feet. So to make a long and detailedly interesting story, albeit rather short, Lovecraft was offered a job as an editor, but he failed to take criticism for his work. He gave up often after one rejection. And so ultimately he even refused to take another job due to not desiring to travel, I believe it was to Chicago in one job offer, to take, you know, a job in another part of the country. And so Lovecraft returned to his home state in Rhode Island and lived off of what was left of his inheritance. And at length, Howard became very ill. Some sources say it was tuberculosis. Some say it was other illnesses. He was notably in incredible pain until his final death. He continued to write journals and notes about his illness until at length he could no longer hold a pen in his hand because of terrible pain. In the 70s, a headstone was created and placed in Rhode Island for H.P. Lovecraft, which reads to this day, quote, "I am Providence," quote, end quote. Author Philip K. Dick is another very influential author. The film Blade Runner, filmed by Ridley Scott, was a direct result of the influence of Philip Dick's short story, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Some alive today view the works of Philip K. Dick as the prolific writings of prophecy and the literature of a visionary of the future, a rather dismal future in some respects. No doubt there are things we have in society today that did not exist in Dick's lifetime. We could say this is also true of authors like H.G. Wells, who wrote 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and The Invisible Man. Philip K. Dick was born in December of 1928 in Chicago, Illinois, and later he died in March of 1982 in Santa Ana, California. Dick lived for a total of 53 years. He was a writer, novelist, and an essayist. And some even consider Dick as a visionary of boding and forewarning and with precognitive powers. Skipping ahead here, I'll read to you a quote from an online source. I'll just jump around a bit. See, in 1963, Philip K. Dick won the Hugo Award for his publication of The Man in the High Castle. And that, of course, was a book about what if during World War II, America didn't win the war and things had been quite different. Although he was hailed as a genius in the world of science fiction, the literary world in the mainstream was, well, it was unappreciative of his work, and Dick could publish books only through the lower paying science fiction publishing houses such as Ace. Even in his later years, Philip K. Dick continued to have some serious financial troubles. There were some episodes in Dick's life, purportedly, some spousal abuse with one of his wives. I believe he had married at least five times. And in another episode, he actually tried to kill himself. Sometimes Dick expressed that he felt his mind was being invaded. He was also worried that the communists were going to take over the United States. Though, oddly enough, he was at one time married to a wife who had strong socialistic views, and well, I'm not sure how they managed to sustain a marriage with very different views, but in general, Dick had a rather eventful and sometimes chaotic lifestyle, or so that is written. One thing I didn't think of sharing earlier is I had watched a video where Philip K. Dick expressed his success in science fiction, or being able to sell science fiction, was due to his relationship with some people in France. Okay, having said that, I'm rather fond of Dick's stories, an amazing mind, and probably ordinarily not an entirely bad fellow. But some things were likely going on in his personal life which were swept under the rug, or maybe some problems some folks didn't want to face, maybe including the author himself. Well, that's not uncommon. People do that all the time. In review of the three great minds here and the lives of these people I have briefly outlined, which probably doesn't do these gentlemen enough justice, I must now ask myself where I stand and how I perform in my own life path, whether it is circumstantial barriers or my own influences in the world surrounding me. Where can psionics help us? Well, as I've already mentioned in the beginning of this podcast, I believe psionics requires the initial training, a certain degree of brutal honesty about ourselves. We don't have to disclose these details with anyone, but to ourselves, we must practice being brutally honest with ourselves, and then we can be much more successful in life's many challenges. Again, whether these challenges come to us from external forces or by a result of our own actions, whether these are directly or influential. As well, we may use psionics to write some code into our reality or into the energy sphere surrounding other people. We can also alter or balance various energy qualities about our own persona with psionics. There's a lot we can do with magic as well, but after we lay down the groundwork and cast our electronic spells to make opportunity knock, well, then we have to be willing to walk through that new portal which opens before us and do some work. Our relationships to other people is one other very important aspect about who we are. It is easy to become very angry with people, for instance. But suppose we didn't become too angry and instead took some time to recognize what is really wrong in our situation. Maybe we've become too reliant upon somebody else who simply doesn't share our views, doesn't have the resources, or maybe hasn't grown in the same way that we have ourselves, and we're on different life paths. There's always room for improvement, as the saying goes, and much of the time that is what we are dealing with when other people offend us. But let us suppose that the more typical problem facing any person on this planet is lack of resources. Well, psionics can help us draw some of those resources to us in our direction. We can sort of gravitate or magnetize those things we want to start flowing towards us, and maybe win for us some favor of someone we have always wanted to meet or do business with. Whatever you can imagine, you can project via psionics. But again, you have to be willing to do some of the work that comes with any new relationship or partnership with other people. It can also be that we might consider what we are or are not willing to do. This is a big consideration for anyone pursuing a business or operating as a freelancer, or even as an actor or actress, a performer. Well, one must ask the question, what am I not willing to do? Once we know the answer to this question, well, then we know what our limitations truly are. It isn't about what you have right now parked in your garage. It is about what you are willing to do and what you are not willing to do to be on the right path for you. Only you can determine this path. However, with some skills and tools like dowsing skills, radionics, and psionics, you have a better chance of making it in a rather difficult world, making it more the way you want it to be. Consider learning more about psionics and apply my methods to your daily routine to see how far you can get ahead in the big game of life. Conjure up new friends, or heck, enchant some new romance. Summon to you the things that you want as a part of your life with the power of psionics and the miraculous prayer board. Now, a lot of people don't really fully understand psionics. That is why I decided to come forward into the public domain with my invention of the miraculous prayer board. The prayer board can help us zero in on whatever is our belief, or even for some of us, our faith. Everything is simplified while we sit with our prayer boards, meditating and manifesting a miracle pattern. But the moment we walk out that front door, well, the world once again becomes a complicated place, doesn't it? H.P. Lovecraft simply did not have a means, or perhaps he failed to develop a hardened personality to deal with the difficulties out in the world in such a way that might have been more effective for him. However, with a prayer board, we can access the power of psionics to amplify our belief, bring that intent into a balanced and sacred geometry, and, you know, sort of stack the cards in our favor for the big game of life. Does that mean all will be perfect for us when we step out of the front door? Not exactly. No. However, we will meet with some benefits and some advantages, maybe a perchance encounter with somebody friendly or generous, an encounter that has been programmed into the world via psionics, and all we have to do is have the courage to step out of the front door and reap the fruits of our psionic efforts. These three things, keep in mind: willpower, belief, practice. Combined with the miraculous prayer board, that really is all one will ever need to gain a little edge in the big game of life. We simply have to be willing to take charge of our lives. Take that next step. Move forward from simply listening to my podcast and read some of my books. Understand the next step, the practice, the formulations, the methods, and some simple instruments you can put together at home. Form good relationships with other people. The prayer board can help you right there. And of course, be willing to do things that are necessary or required in order for those manifestations or relationships to be of real value to us in our lives. We can also reflect on the lives of other people that we've read about or that we've known, and you will realize what we all have in common, how we are different, and yet how we are not so incredibly alien to one another. The choice to live your life now, in the here and now, is entirely yours. So I leave you with the choice to make. Either live for tomorrow's escape from your captivators and our oppressors, or live for today. Enjoy your precious moments. Even the little things in life make a big difference. And take this time of isolation, the social distancing, the gag from Big Brother. Take this time of isolation for building yourself up. Or as Henry Rollins has often said, quote, sculpt yourself from stone, end quote, and make yourself your own man or woman. If you enjoy these podcasts, please patronize my psionic shop at vrilok.com/shop. Thank you for joining me on Planet Verloc tonight, and until next time, as always, always keep the magic high. This is Tom Verloc, signing out.